Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Game one reaction, Preds and Canes last night. Not all bad, tied 2-2. Going to the third, they had their opportunity. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, later this hour, his thoughts on it. Mark Howard, later today. Hal Gill as well. So I understand sometimes, Caroline, that I'm not the most popular guy in the world when it comes especially to the Predators.
I like you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But Preds fans can get very upset sometimes, and I usually just chalk it up to somebody's got to tell the truth, and that's me, and I don't affirm beliefs on the radio. I don't. I have opinions. I say them, and then I'm pretty strong in them, and I move on to the next opinion. And one of the things that has bothered me for years is that it feels like Predators fans have always wanted to believe that Ryan Ellis was a big-time player. They have always wanted to believe it. But the truth is, even going back to 2017, he was always the fourth guy. PK Subban was the number one guy, you know, in the media because PK was the biggest story. Roman Josi was the number one guy because he was the best player. Mattias Ekholm playing with PK Subban, the number one pair, they were fantastic. And Ekholm is a really freaking good player. And Ryan Ellis had a nice little run in 2017. Ellis got hurt, had surgery, came back the next year, had an okay season, and then it came contract time. Ryan Ellis was great when he was making $3 million a year. He was awesome. Now he's making more, and now he's signed to a long-term contract. I believe it's 7 years after this, no, 6 years after this year for Ryan Ellis. And at the beginning of this, I used to always argue. I argued with Hal Gill one time. He filled in for Floyd. And I argued with Hal Gill. And I said, I think before signing Ellis to the extension, I thought they needed to trade him. I saw what Oliver Ekman-Larsson got. And I saw what John Carlson got. And I'm like, that's too much money for Ryan Ellis. He was pushed around by the Jets, by the big body of Blake Wheeler. And those guys at Winnipeg, he was pushed around. And you look at Winnipeg's roster back in 2018, that's first-round pick city. Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor. I mean, those are big boys. And they just pushed Ryan Ellis right along. And then in 2019, they signed him to the extension, which I was against. Wanted the picks and the prospects. Nope. They signed him to the extension. Then he gets just whipped around like a rag doll against Dallas. I mean, he just did nothing in the series, and Jamie Benn just embarrassed him in the corner, and everybody remembers it. And ever since then, it's like the star of Ryan Ellis keeps dimming. It just keeps dimming, dimming, dimming. I've been here the whole time. Preds fans, I think, are starting to catch up. This year, I think the Predators caught up. Remember the report Elliot Friedman said only Josi, Ellis, and Rene were untouchable? And I threw my hands up and said, what makes Ryan Ellis so special? What makes Ryan Ellis special? And then Elliot Friedman said, you know, I think some teams are calling the Predators and saying, maybe not Ekholm, but what about Ellis? Ryan Ellis, I think the Predators know. Ryan Ellis is, he's not that dude. He is not a first pair defenseman in this league. I don't care what Adam Vingan's analytics.com say, he is not a first-pair defenseman. And last night was further proof that when you get into the big games against the big boys, he gets pushed around and he is a non-factor. When the Predators went to Game 7 of the second round in 2016, he was firmly a second-pair defenseman. Josi and Weber were one. He and Ekholm were two. And they were good. When the Predators went to the Cup the next year, that Josi and Ellis pair was a number two pair. Subban and Ekholm drew Patrick Kane. Subban and Ekholm were the ones who Peter Laviolette used as the first defensive unit. Subban and Ekholm are big, strong, talented. Ellis isn't. And he just keeps getting knocked around. And I wonder if last night was kind of the moment where the Preds fans realized everything that they've hoped for with Ryan Ellis, they realized he just can't, he's just not that. Because I watched last night and I thought Ellis just got totally knocked around by Carolina because he's not a first pair defenseman against the big boys. He's paid to be a first pair defenseman, but he's not. And by the way, Ellis got, I think, 6'2", 5". Ekholm's going to get more. Ekholm's going to get in the 7 to 8 range because he's big, he's strong, he's powerful. He's a first-pair defenseman. Ryan Johansson on the other side of this. We've seen Ryan Johansson play really, really well in the playoffs. We saw 2017, he dominated Jonathan Toews. He, I think, scored the game-winning goal in Game 6 against the St. Louis Blues, and he went toe-to-toe with Ryan Kesler and the Anaheim Ducks, and they went after him in that series and ultimately ended up hurting him. And Ryan Johansson has had a steady decline ever since that, always kind of raising his game a little bit in the playoffs. Last night, Ryan Johansson played really well for a period, and then he totally fell off. And I'm starting to wonder with those two guys specifically, if maybe instead of saying, if Ellis plays at this level, if Johansson plays at the 2017 level he did against Jonathan Toews, maybe these guys just are what they are. Maybe they're just not high-end players anymore. You know, sometimes guys have a prime, and everybody's prime is different. P.K. Subban in his prime, one of the best defensemen in the league. P.K. Subban now, not a replacement-level player. Maybe Ellis is just past his prime. Maybe Arvidsson is just past his prime. Maybe Johansson is just past his prime. Maybe these guys are what they are. And I said going into the season that I wanted to kind of evaluate the core and see who belongs and who doesn't. And right now, you can't tell me that Ryan Ellis is a first-pair defenseman on a Stanley Cup winner. You can't convince me Ryan Johansson is a number one center on a Stanley Cup winner. You can't convince me Victor Arvidsson is a first-line winger on a team that can compete. So, again, instead of getting worked up when they don't make plays, like last night they didn't make plays, maybe we're just at the realization that these guys aren't very good. Or at least that they're not as good at the level that you want them to be. Or the level that they were sold to you they were going to be. We talk about Johansson and the $8 million all the time. But Adam Vingan said on the show before he signed the deal, he's going to be overpaid. Predators sent Seth Jones in order to get him. He's a restricted free agent. You got no choice but to give him money. And that's what they did. But now they're kind of stuck with it. Maybe this is who Johansson is. Remember John Tortorella? Now, this wouldn't be the first player John Tortorella didn't see eye to eye with. But John Tortorella took the job in Columbus, and he couldn't get rid of Ryan Johansson fast enough. Maybe that's just who he is. That's just his effort level. That's just who he is. Maybe Ryan Ellis is the same way. I asked John Hines today about Duchesne and Johansson, but specifically we'll focus on his answer on Johansson, about the fact that we've seen Johansson play number one center minutes, just production in a Stanley Cup-ish run before he got hurt. And what has to happen for him to get back to that level? Here's what John Hines said.
You know, I thought Joey started out strong early in the game. You know, I didn't think it was as good as the game continued to go on. So I think the sustainability of playing at the level that we need him to play at, particularly against Stahl, as the game continues to go on at the same level of intensity, needs to be better for 60 minutes. So I thought there were some good pockets there with him, but we need much more sustainability and consistency as the game goes on, particularly in the playoffs, particularly on the road with matchups that you got to be able to win your matchups, and you have to be able to do it for, you know, longer than 20 minutes.
Maybe he just can't win his matchups. Maybe we've just seen enough, you know, maybe the prime, but what we saw in 2017, maybe it's over. I mean, there were guys, Jarrell Casey was a great Titan in 2017. He's probably out of the league now. Probably his career's over. Maybe Johansson and Ellis, maybe what they had then that we all believed in, or I shouldn't say we all, but what you all believed in, like maybe it's over. And that's why I think this series is a good look in the mirror. I mean, this will give you the idea of whether or not this team's legit. Remember, everybody says, hey, you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. When you play the best, it's a measuring stick. And last night, the guys that we believed in or had been sold were the guys that could compete with anybody, certainly couldn't do it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. So I'm not getting mad. I'm not demanding anybody be traded or fired or, you know, released or bought out or whatever. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying, like, maybe it's eye-opening. Because I told people last night, Well, I'll tell you what I told people last night, because I do want to get to that. 615-737-1025. We will get to your phones and your reaction. And I asked Philip Forsberg about the guys that aren't carrying their weight. What Philip Forsberg had to say, we'll do that as well. 615-737-1025. We're live from the Old Sunning Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Boy, it gets me excited to talk about those guys. They are the best. They are proud supporters of the Nashville Predators through thick and thin. Hiller is there. You can see that logo right there on the practice jersey, right there on the ice at Bridgestone Arena. Hiller loves the Predators, and they love tax credits for energy-efficient homes, and they're back this year. When you put EnergySar certified equipment in your home, you'll earn a tax credit with the IRS. This month, Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical is helping you keep more money in your pocket and doubling your tax credit when you purchase select new HVAC systems and tankless water heaters. They're offering special financing so you make no payments until next year. Visit happyhiller.com for all of the details. As always, happy you will be, or the service is free. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, my guys, and proud supporters of the Predators and the Tennessee Volunteers. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today.
Well, we have to, individually, and, I think there's a lot of performances, within our lineup that need to be better from last night. And, we've talked a lot about lineup changes and who's in and who's out, but there's lots of players that are in the lineup that don't really ever come out, and they need to be better. That's you need guys, guys that are you're expecting to be in your lineup every night, carry big minutes, play hard matchups. There needs to be better from that. And we're talking about subbing certain guys in. Could be a 5-6 D pair. It could be guys that have been in and out of the lineup, some guys that are out of the lineup. But the basic comes down to is we can make those decisions. But the players that are in your lineup every night that you count on to play important roles, play big matchups, be difference makers in the game, there needs to be elevation in those players. And if that gets better, then our team's going to be able to be a better team and be more competitive as the series continues to go on. But first and foremost, that has to take place regardless of any other small lineup decisions you make.
There you go, Stillman and Company. That was John Hines today, basically saying that those guys that we're talking about, the Ellises, the Johansons, the Duchesnes, the money guys, that they need to play better. Last night, I told my friends, I was talking to my friends, and I said, in order for the Predators to beat these kind of teams and win these kind of games, the guys that we consider to be the good players, the guys that they have invested in being the good players, they have to match the level of the other team's good players. They have to play to that level. And I just think as a Predators fan, sometimes, Caroline, it gets tiring to watch the same thing every time. That being said, I think I was just pretty harsh on Ellis and Johansson. Do you think I was too harsh after one game, or do you think it is a fair criticism of what we have seen of late?
I think it's something that we very much so saw last night, so it's relevant to talk about it, but it's not just a knee-jerk reaction just from last night. I think that's something that we've been seeing from those two guys for quite some time. If we were to say, Kelly Yarncroke and Luke Cunningham after last night, they need to go. They don't deserve their contracts. That's not fair. They didn't play well in one game, and they've pulled their weight very much throughout this entire season.
Also, they've never been propped up as the big guy. I mean, Yarncroke's 6-year, $2 million per year contract, and he's a versatile two-way forward that can go up and down the lineup. Yarncroke has never been, a guy that we would look to and say, hey, you got to step up.
Right.
It's that, and I don't
it's
think
the
that's
guys who are
Hines
making five,
either.
Six, seven, $8 million dollars a year, and it worries me because there's a decent amount of time on Ryan Johansson, Ryan Ellis, Matt Duchesne's contracts, and that's a lot of money to be paying these guys for not producing day in and day out as you should when you do have a contract of that size.
Do you think though it's an overreaction to one game? Or do you think do you sense the frustration? This is what I feel. I do wonder how the fans feel about it. We'll get to your phones in just a second. I go back to the Ellis thing. I am just so tired of every year Hal Gill and I fight about 10 times a year about whether or not Ryan Ellis is any good. And then push comes to shove and Ellis is the one getting pushed. And I'm so tired of it. And I'm just tired of sitting here and talking about, wait, is Johansson going to produce more? Like, maybe I'm not going to be the greatest parent in the world whenever that day comes. Because if your kid keeps doing the same thing over and over and over and over again, I kind of get tired of it at some point, right?
It does get tiring, especially because when you're getting in these situations where you need your guys, your big guys, the ones that you've been able to count on before, you need them to be really clutch. Last night, it would have been really nice to have the leadership and the production from the guys who need to bring it forward, and that's not necessarily what I saw last night. You know, Roman Josi, I don't think he had that great of a game last night, and I'm not going to go around and say he doesn't deserve his contract. I think that he would be the first person to tell you, hey, I didn't perform like I needed to last night, and I may have really hurt my team's chances at game one, and I think that you see him turn around, and I think that you see in game two, Roman Josi has a much better game, but I don't know if I necessarily feel that same push, that same sort of internal motivation in Ryan Ellis and Ryan Johansson.
So I don't think it's about motivation with Ellis. I just don't think he's that good. I mean, at some point, it's like, you're just not that good. It's like the Corey Davis effect, where everybody thinks Corey Davis is a lot better than Corey Davis is. Corey Davis is not good. Corey Davis is an average wide receiver. He's a number two guy. Everyone's like, oh, Davis, we got to have him. But at least the Titans were smart enough to realize, hey, we're not paying Corey Davis all his money. Jonnu Smith's never had 500 yards receiving in a season. We're not paying him all his money. The Predators just paid all the money, and now I'm just so tired of it. I'm just so tired of watching Ryan Ellis get manhandled in the playoffs. I'm so tired. Now, I thought Johansson played well in the playoffs last year against Arizona in the bubble. I'm so tired of Arvidsson just going into witness protection during the playoffs. I'm so exhausted. Like, at least Roman Josi, like, he plays. He didn't play well last night, but he plays.
He plays.
Philip Forsberg plays. Like, those guys are good. Ekholm plays. These other guys just drive me insane. We'll get to Duchesne in a little bit because I do have a different feeling about Duchesne. But let's go to your phone, 615-737-1025. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, who's up. Craig is up next on UC Soros. Thank you for waiting patiently. Go ahead, Craig.
Hey, Jared, thank you for taking my call. One, I think Soros did a fantastic job of what he had. Like, the first and second period, he was, you know, he made some fantastic saves. And then that third goal where he made that save, it looked like all the other Predators were just sitting there with their hands, well, sitting on their hands. And then the second thing is, like, I totally agree with you about Arvidsson. Like, I'm sick and tired of seeing, like, the Predators only get, like, 20, maybe 30 minutes of great game time in a playoff situation. I'd like to see them do a 60-minute game throughout the whole playoff system. Thank you for taking my call. I'll hang up and listen now.
Thank you for that. Caroline, what did you think?
I don't blame him. I mean, I don't blame him for being tired for seeing that day in and day out. And I think it was Mikael Granlund or Mattias Ekholm today that said, the team that wins plays harder for longer. And that sounds very obvious, but from last night, that's very much so what we saw. The Predators played really hard for 20 minutes. The Carolina Hurricanes played hard for 60. And I think that's incredibly frustrating to see the Predators get to this point and push their season to a point where we didn't think it was going to get and fall short. And I think that, and you know, to your question earlier about, is that an overreaction to game one? It might be. It's only game one. Like, this series very much so has a lot of time left to it. But I think that game one exposed a lot of the holes that the Predators have in their lineup that we may have overlooked during that stretch of a lot of wins.
Oh, I don't think we overlooked it. I mean, I think, well, I'd say we, because I always talk for myself. You know, I mean, right. I guess when I say we, like,
maybe Predators fans as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the same people that called in saying, fire the coach, fire the general manager, are now saying, hey, you got 2017 vibes from this team. And I was like, when you first started, remember my analogy, Kentucky football?
Uh-huh.
You just went up against Georgia last night.
Right.
That's what happened. So if I got some five-star recruits, or guys you're telling me are five-star recruits, they better start playing like it against Alabama. They better start playing like it against LSU. Because I will say this about the Predators. This is my feeling about last night's game, going back to Hines and John Hines wanting to say, well, you know, it was tied 2-2 after the second period, and we just got to play better and win a game. And I grew up a Vanderbilt football fan, which if you listen to this show, you know that obviously I'm not a huge Vanderbilt football fan anymore. But I grew up a humongous Vanderbilt football fan, which also meant rooting against Tennessee a lot. But, you know, I'd watch Vanderbilt on Saturdays knowing they were going to lose. But every now and then, they always kind of gave you a little hope. Like, they'd play a Florida or a Georgia or an Alabama, or when Tennessee was good, you know, they'd play that kind of team. And it would be 13-10 Georgia after three. And you thought, are we going to do this? Like, are we going to beat the Georgia Bulldogs? And this would happen about once or twice a season, and it would be one of the good teams, a Georgia, a Florida, a team like that. It's like, are we going to beat the Georgia Bulldogs or the Florida Gators? And then Florida would score a touchdown, and then Vanderbilt would fumble the kickoff, and Florida would score another touchdown, and then Vanderbilt's down by two scores, so now they're throwing, or now three scores, and now they're throwing, and they go three and out. They punt to Florida. Florida scores another touchdown. Final score, 41-10. But in that third quarter, it was like, can Vanderbilt do this? Can Vanderbilt? And it, first time they ever actually did it, I was a sophomore in high school. They beat Georgia. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, Vanderbilt beat Georgia. And I was 16. That's how long it took. When I watched the Predators last night, and it's tied 2-2, it had the Vanderbilt football vibes. The, can they really do this? Can they really beat the Hurricanes? And then the Hurricanes went out there like Florida or Georgia or Alabama or Tennessee back when they were good, and they flexed their muscle on Vanderbilt in the third period. And I hope that that's not the accurate assessment here, that Vanderbilt is not, or Vanderbilt, that the Predators are not Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt football when I was a kid. When James Franklin was the Vanderbilt coach, it was a miracle because all those games where it's like, are they going to do this? They ended up doing it. Are they going to beat Georgia? They did. Are they going to beat Florida? They did. They beat Tennessee. It's like, wow, they actually did it. But with the Predators, it's like, it's, I have these vibes inside of myself that's like, are they really going to be able to compete with this team? Are they really going to do it? And we hear from the callers and the texters that optimistically say, oh, no, they're going to do it. I believe in this team. They're going to do it. And you know what? Maybe they win game two. I don't think they're going to win game two, but maybe they win game two and make this a series and put Carolina, you know, put them on edge. But I just have a hard time. I know how good. I now consistently have seen how good the good players for the Preds are, and I've seen how good the Carolina good players are, and I just don't see much matching up there as far as it's concerned. 615-737-1025. I did ask Philip Forsberg about those guys playing better. I thought his answer was interesting. And then, of course, we'll go to your phones. 615-737-1025, Stillman and Company. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. We are streaming live on Twitter, where you just go to my Twitter or 1025 The Game or Caroline's Twitter. You just click right there, watch us. And I would say subscribe to the YouTube channel. I've really gotten in to, I don't want to admit this on the air, but every morning I wake up, I've been doing like cardio every morning before mm-hmm. I eat, you know, do a little of the fasted cardio. Some people say it helps burn more fat. Some people say it doesn't, but I think it's a nice start to the day.
Just get your body moving.
Take a light little cardio, get thinking. And I used to watch ESPN all the time, but ESPN's not going to talk with the Predators. So I have been watching Robbie and Rex Road on YouTube. So you literally just put YouTube in, 1025 The Game, just click it. And all of our shows are there. So if you're somebody who drives home at 3:30 like you are right now, just click that, you know, when you get home, say you're doing stuff, just put us on YouTube, and you can see our shining and very, very handsome faces.
And you can also watch back previous shows. So if you're not available from 2 to 6 and you want to get your Stillman
like
Company content, exactly, you can go to YouTube, you can go to Spotify, you can go to Twitter, and you can watch our shows back.
So I've just gotten really into that. So, there's something else I think I was going to tell the people about. ESPN 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren, Donick, and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 102.5 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. Stillman and Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Harper now with Niederreiter right there. Niederreiter looked like he was going to stick the knee out. And the puck comes back to center. Lift in by Niederreiter. trying to go across, and the shot was stopped. Trocheck somehow or another missed that, but then they follow up, and Foss puts it in, or Niederreiter from the slot, and the Hurricanes at 2:26 of the third take a 3-2 lead.
What an initial save from Saros. Oh. And the play continues behind the net, then right out into the slot. Niederreiter buries it.
Oh, that one was painful. The game winner for Carolina. So last night, and again, I think the bigger issue is you hear the names for Carolina on every big play. Trocheck, Teravainen, Niederreiter, Stahl, Aho. It's all the big guys. Where are your big guys? I asked Philip Forsberg last night after the game about what he can do. He's in a leadership position as an assistant captain. I asked Philip Forsberg after the game, how can he get the guys that have played well in the past, that are considered to be good players, that aren't playing well, how can he get them to play well? Here's what Philip Forsberg said after the game.
Phil, you play with a lot of guys on this team that have had high-level success in the playoffs. What can you do to get some of those guys that may be not playing at that level right now to play there so you guys can compete with Carolina?
I'm not sure exactly who you're referring to, but I think we obviously, everybody that are in this team are looking at each other in the mirror every night. We want to come out and play our best hockey, and I can only speak for myself, but I can do a lot of things better out there, and definitely play a better, more complete game. Those individuals that you're referring to, you have to ask them.
You think you buy that he doesn't know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't buy that.
Ian, you buy that he doesn't know who I'm talking about?
Well, I think some of those players, yeah, I guess you're mostly referring to the cup run year.
Sure.
Considering they didn't really have much more success after that.
And Duchesne. I mean, Duchesne's had success in the league. I mean, he's been an all-star. He took out Tampa a couple of years ago. I mean, Duchesne's got skins on the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, but yes, I mean, to me, I'm referring to Johansson, Ellis, Arvidsson, Duchesne, you know, that
Yossi
group.
Yeah.
But like Yossi, and yeah, I didn't think Yossi was great last night, but he's not in what I would now call the do more crew.
No.
Like the guys that need to start doing more. Uh-huh. You know, the pay what you owe group. You know, this is the do more crew. Arvidsson, Johansson, Ellis, Duchesne. Am I leaving anybody out of the do more crew?
I don't think so. I think that sounds about right. All the guys. Maybe Granlund, maybe.
Nah, Granlund's played pretty well, and he's not a big money guy, and we never really loved Granlund. So mm-hmm.
I think that's probably fair then.
The do more crew. He knows who I'm talking about. Let's go to your phone. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We got tons of text messages to get to. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, going to join us in just a little bit with his thoughts on game one. Caroline, what's in the text line?
James texted in and said, I don't understand why Arvidsson is in the top line. He is constantly getting knocked down or falling down. He hasn't been using his speed to his advantage. Duchesne should move up with Forsberg and Joey because he's harder to knock off the puck. If it were up to me, Rocco would play over Arvidsson.
So if it were up to me, neither guy's playing. I would not play Arvidsson. I am over Arvidsson. If Arvidsson were 100% healthy, then I'd give him a crack on the third line, which is where he played and was very effective in 2016. Now, he was on that first line in 2017, but if you look back at 2017, Arvidsson scored the first goal against Chicago, and I think he had another goal against St. Louis, and he didn't do much until the Stanley Cup final. And when he scored in the final, it was like, I remember him with an interview saying, I needed that. I think Arvidsson is used up. It's like what everybody fears one day is going to happen to Derrick Henry, where the tread is just off the tires. I think that little body has played as hard as possible for as long as he could, and he has gotten all the mileage out of him that he can go with, and this is what he is. I mean, I think the tread is off the tires on Arvidsson. I think the injuries keep piling up for Arvidsson. I agree with the texter. I would put Duchesne on that first line. I would do it because, again, I said this yesterday, is it put up or shut up time for Johansson and Duchesne? And Duchesne's not getting enough of an opportunity. Let's just be real. I asked John Hines, Ian, if you could. I asked Hines about Johansson and Duchesne. And John Hines just will not play Duchesne 5-on-5. And I don't think that's fair. And I tweeted out this morning because I heard the morning show talking about Duchesne. and about, you know, is this kind of it with Duchesne and Hines and the lack of playing time? And I tweeted out this morning, I said, am I the only one that thought Matt Duchesne played okay last night? Like, I mean, obviously he wasn't good, but I thought he was okay. He had an assist on the Holler goal. Like, I thought Duchesne played
pretty
well.
He produced last night.
I thought he played okay. I mean, again,
I don't think he played $8 million a year, but he definitely produced.
Yeah, he didn't play like a good player, but he didn't play like a bad player. Like,
he was fine. I do wonder why he's not on the power play one. You know, they put Yarncroke on the first power play since Tolvanen was out.
I mean,
I'm not really sure.
I want to investigate the relationship between Hines and Duchesne, because Duchesne clearly was politicking to be on that line with Arvidsson or with Johansson and Forsberg. And Hines quickly shut that down last week. To Ian's point, he's not on the first power play unit. I mean, I asked Hines about Duchesne, and to Hines' credit, I think he's going to play Duchesne more. Here's what Hines said today.
I think as far as Matt, I thought Matt played pretty well. You know, I think that there's some opportunities to get him in there a little bit more, you know, which we will. Sometimes it's the matchups and the way the game goes. But, you know, I thought Matt won a lot of puck battles in the offensive zone. He had the nice assist. I thought a lot of, with the amount that we killed and to come back off the lines. But we're going to need both those guys to be real strong players for us here moving forward.
I mean, it's kind of like, hey, yeah, I should have played him more. Which, again, is I'm looking at the coach saying, and the other thing about Duchesne is this. You have to find out what you have in him. At some point, you got to know. Like, okay, is this a $3 million guy that you paid $8 million to? Or is this a guy who's got it in him? He just needs a little consistency. He just needs a little success. And I told you guys yesterday, I told you, Caroline, I feel like Matt Duchesne, since the day he signed that contract, has played with a grand piano worth of pressure strapped to his back. And they've got to play him because they've got to see what they have. The difference between me and the Predators is the Predators have approached everything as if all that mattered this year was making the playoffs and that all that matters in the playoffs is finding a way to win the Stanley Cup. I have never dreamed that this team could win a Stanley Cup. So I have been more so thinking about in the future, you know, what can you do to be good enough to go compete for the Cup? I'd rather have a team. The Colorado Avalanche. Ian, you remember the Punch and Judy Avalanche.
Yeah, they're looking pretty solid.
When they had that team and they lost in six games to the Predators, I said they're going to be good in a couple years. They're going to be good. Like, I'd rather have that team, that 2018 Avalanche team, that Punch and Judy bum team. I'd rather have them than the Predators right now, because that 2018 team, you could see, you knew MacKinnon was already a superstar. You know Landeskog, Rantanen, who I think is kind of a good player because he's playing with those guys. Sam Girard, you knew that Cole Makar was in the pipe. Like, you knew. They had a good coach in Jared Bednar. You knew that Colorado team was eventually going to be good.
Do you not think the young guys on this Predators team can eventually become that?
Hell no. No. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon at that point was a first-line center who absolutely rocked the Predators in that six-game series. I mean, he was the best player on the ice in that series. And I remember going in, and I didn't know much about Colorado because they weren't worth watching for like 6 years before this. And they traded away Matt Duchesne at the beginning of that season, and that was like, oh my God, they traded away their only good player. They trade away Matt Duchesne. They end up making the playoffs. They beat the Blues on the last night of the year. They get into the playoffs. And everyone's like, oh my God, this first line. And I just remember MacKinnon being out on the ice, and it looked like, I'm like, that's like Michael Jordan on skates. That guy is awesome. John Hines won't even play the two young guys that might be the future of the Predators. He won't even put them in the game. You wouldn't do that to Nathan MacKinnon. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, his reaction. He will join us next. His thoughts on the Predators game one loss. Is it as bad as it feels? We'll ask Greg Wyshynski that next. Stillman and Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds losers 0-1, but again, as I said yesterday, I gave the Predators a 20% chance to win the series, and that a loss would not affect that. So it's still 80-20, but I would have settled for 2-2 going to the third period out of court, and the Predators did not respond in the third period. How damaging was last night, and how much was last night a true reflection of the talent gap between the Predators and the Hurricanes. Greg Wyshynski joins us now, ESPN NHL analyst. So, Greg, let's start with that question right there. Last night's game, 2-2 going to the third. I'm sitting there thinking, just steal it. Just find a way to score and then let UC Soros lock it up. Steal game one from Carolina. Take the advantage right then and there. And they got totally out-muscled, outplayed, outskated, out just toughed by Carolina. And now I'm wondering if this Predators team belongs on the same ice as the Hurricanes. What's your reaction to game one?
Yeah, no, I think that's a proper read of it, right? Like, you know, I saw some comments from David Poile earlier today about how, you know, they need their best players to step up in situations like that. And I think game one is a prime example of it. You know, the Carolina Hurricanes got what they needed from some of their top scorers. And when you need someone to make a play in a 2-2 game, you didn't get someone to make a play in a 2-2 game. So it's frustrating, and mostly it's frustrating because as the underdog in the series, you know, you want to put the fear of God in them a little bit, you know, in game one. You know, that's where you start to make your declarative statement about how the series is going to go, and they just didn't get that in game one.
I think what bothers me, going back to those Poile comments, and John Hines probably said about five times in his, you know, seven-question press conference today, but what bothers me about the notion of the good players need to play well is that that's the reason David Poile used when he fired Peter Laviolette. That's what happened when the Predators got manhandled by the Dallas Stars in 2019. It was, hey, we need these guys. And, you know, as we're now calling them on the show, Greg, the Dumore crew, Johansson, Arvidsson, Ellis, you know, the Predators are saying, we need these guys to do more. They pay Matt Duchene all this money to come in and do more. And I'm just wondering if these guys just aren't as good as they're paid to be or as good as the Predators have maybe hyped them up to be.
Yeah, but isn't that just the general conundrum of the season? I mean, you know, there was a time earlier this year that we were all talking about whether or not it was the end of this group's run, whether there needed to be significant changes, whether there needed to be a significant change in the big job in the front office. And then, you know, UC Soros goes nuts. They get enough offense. The Dallas Stars can't answer the bell. And the playoffs. And now you're wondering about whether, you know, that conversation should continue or if you know, it's not going to continue in the offseason because of just making the playoffs. It's a great question. I mean, it's the question we've had about this core for a while.
Will you tell me where you lie on that, Greg Wyshynski, our guest? Because I think I am the unpopular one here, Greg, in Nashville. The run that they went on was fun. It was exciting. It's fun to be in the playoffs. It's fun to be covering a team that is in the playoffs. It doesn't really change my outlook on kind of David Poile or where the team is headed. I don't see, it's funny, Greg, because we just compared this to the 2018 Avalanche team that the Predators beat in six games. You could see that Avalanche team, and you knew they were going to be pretty good in a couple of years. I don't think you can look at this Predator team if they get bounced in five games by Carolina and say, hey, they have the makings of something that could be special. I think that tells you that's what you are, is you are good enough to make the playoffs and you're not good enough to do anything else.
I think what it comes down to is, like, who's making that decision, though? You know what I mean? Like, I think if it's David Poile, I think he likes this roster. I think he kind of likes the core. He's obviously handed out some contracts that would speak to this being the group that's going to be in place going forward for a little bit. If it's, you know, one of these several ownership groups, groups within ownership that'll be making this call, what are their opinions? Are they okay being just good enough to contend, but maybe not good enough to win a Stanley Cup? It's a conundrum because I'm not entirely sure. And I've spoken to people in Nashville that aren't entirely sure who is ultimately going to determine the direction of this organization.
Mm-hmm. Am I overreacting to game one?
No. It depends on what your overreaction is. Is your overreaction that they're not good enough to win the series? Because that's the right reaction. I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes are a really good hockey team. They're a complete team. They can beat you in a variety of ways. They're obviously getting good goaltending. And if they didn't get it from the kid last night, they had other options to go to. Their defense core is the kind of thing that we used to tout about the Predators back in the day as far as its depth and quality. They're a better team, just overall. I think there should be some pride in having made the playoffs in a very strange season and made the playoffs ahead of some other teams that were at times a little bit more hard-charging than they were at the end. But by no means did I come to the series and thinking that outside of a UC Soros grand larceny in this series, they weren't going to win the series.
Mm-hmm. Greg Wyshynski's our guest. One thing that bothered me, and I don't know how much it should bother me, but I said on Friday when John Hines hinted that he may take Elly Tolvanen out of the lineup, I thought that taking Tolvanen and Fabbro out of the lineup was a bad idea. And I thought it was a bad idea for a lot of reasons. One of it being, you know, I don't know how most people were when they were 22, but when I was 22, if you put somebody in ahead of me that was worse than me, I probably would have resented it a little bit. I think last night the Predators missed that on the power play with Elly Tolvanen out. I think clearly running out Ben Harper, who is a minor league player, and Eric Gudbranson instead of Dante Fabbro, I thought those were bad decisions. I'm not sure how bad of a decision it was, but I just don't understand what John Hines was thinking by taking more talented guys out of the roster to put in guys who aren't. And I just wonder how much you think maybe that line of thinking hurt John Hines last night.
Well, yeah, but it also speaks to the bigger conversation we're having here, right? Like, you have two guys that are that age that in theory should be part of your building blocks towards something different eventually, right? Wouldn't playoff experience, wouldn't putting them in that spot, wouldn't a game one on the road looking for them to contribute kind of be more to speak to that end than anything else? Like, to me, it's kind of only detrimental to the game at hand, but detrimental to the building process that should be happening in the organization.
Do you think Greg Wyshynski's with us? Do you think that the Predators, if they can take game two, can make a series out of this?
No! I just told you! Carolina's great! They're the superior team! I respect there are certain parts of the Predators that I respect, and I do believe that their high-end players have more to contribute than they've contributed, and maybe things are a little bit more interesting. I'm not saying that this is a sweep. I'm not saying that it's a mismatch of mismatches. I'm just saying that Carolina is the better team, and at the end of the day, I don't know if there's another gear the Predators can find that's going to change that.
Mm-hmm. What do people who don't cover the Predators but cover the league as a whole make of the regression of Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene?
Well, Duchene was always a weird one because, like, he's sort of treated as a star player. He's been acquired to be a star player, and he's not necessarily shown to be at that level on a consistent basis. He's a perfect two A on a team. Problem being is that, like you said, they don't have a 1A right now in the way that Johansson's played, and it's really inexplicable, and it's a bummer. I mean, listen, I covered the Cup final when they made it, and I think one of the great what-ifs in recent hockey history is that what if he was healthy for that playoff, for the latter parts of that playoff. But from the outside looking in, it's a conundrum. And it's one of those deals where if you're looking for changes to be made going forward, it obviously has to be not to have those two guys making that kind of money both at the same position and not producing commensurate to that investment.
Yeah, I covered the Bruins when I first got started in this industry. And I know how the fans of Boston would react to the situation the Predators are in. You brought up that Cup final run. Greg, you were on with us talking about, you know, when the New Jersey Devils went through their first big run and how that kind of spurred on that fan base. Do you think if the Predators had a more advanced market, as in, you know, people that had grown up with the game, do you think their feelings about this run that they've had this season and getting into the playoffs would be different than it is now, where a lot of people that called this show that wanted to fire the general manager or fire the coach or blow up the roster now are saying, hey, in 2017, this team went all the way to the Cup final. Do you think it'd be different if it was a longer tenured with more success fan base?
That's a tough one because I don't want to be insulting a Predators fans who are some of like the most passionate people I've ever met. And I think that, I mean, I've got people in my life that are Preds fans that are real pissed off about the way that things have gotten. You know, there's no question there's a level of anger about and frustration about just being good enough, you know, and not having maybe capitalized on the opportunity that they had, you know, when everybody was young and locked into long-term contracts and you know, going to the Cup, but then not returning to that level in the subsequent season. I will say, though, that, you know, as far as maturation of a market, maturation of a franchise, the level of success of being a cup contender is still a very recent development. And I think where you're right is that if this was a team that had won significantly or even challenged significantly in its first decade of existence, then maybe the perceptions of the last few years would be different. Because we're still kind of in a, I don't want to, I mean, for lack of a better term, a honeymoon period for contention. You know what I mean? And maybe that the happy vibes from that kind of dull the edges a little bit on how frustrating it should be to not have capitalized on the opportunity they had. They were stacked, man. Like, that cup team, you know, when it lost, and you and I spoke about it at that point, the next few years were exactly like the Colorado situation, where everybody was locked in, they had a ton of cap space, everybody was young, and for whatever reason, the core didn't capitalize on it, and you know, maybe there wasn't enough done to color around the edges the right way to make them a championship team.
Yeah. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, last one for you, Greg. If the Predators are going to win the series, I said if they're going to win the series, what actually has to happen in order for it to become a reality?
You need Line to get going in a pretty significant way, in a way that makes the Carolina Hurricanes pay attention. You need Soros to steal upwards of two games in the series, maybe more. And maybe, I mean, I hate to say this, but like Carolina is real good, but there are certain threads that can be pulled where they're maybe unravel a little bit. Like I think they got really lucky with Slavin playing, and we saw last year that when Svechnikov went out, it kind of changed the complexion. They've got offensive depth, but not a huge amount of it. So if one of their guys went out, that could change the trajectory of the series. But again, man, you're dealing with a team that can beat you offensively, can be the best team in the series defensively. And if you do get to the kid goalie, they've got experience behind them to kind of fill in the blanks. They're a really well-constructed team, and they're going to be a real tough out.
Yep, Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. And I think a lot of that, too, is also credit to how good Carolina is. Greg, appreciate it. Appreciate you. As always, I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yep, Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. Well, how about that? Hey, if they win game two, can it be a series? Nope, says Greg Wyshynski. Your reaction. Because I have a little bit different reaction. I know I think that Greg and I probably are on the same wavelength, Caroline, on a lot of things. I have a different reaction, though. I really do. 615-737-1025. Your reaction. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, says on this show, even if they win game two, they're not going to beat Carolina. What do you make of that? Because I have my take on it next. 615-737-1025, Stillman and Company. We're delivered by TriStar Moving, Mark Howard, in 30 minutes. It's ESPN 1025, The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.